From The Spectator, how Jon Stewart killed comedy. Yeah? Spectator writes, somewhere along the way, Jon Stewart discovered he could make stupid people laugh by smirking at Fox News clips, and the world has never been the same since. The Daily Show's heyday came at the turn of the century, just after Jon Stewart had taken it over from Craig Kilborn. His approach back then wasn't so much activist as satirical, aping the corporate news and thereby exposing its stupidities and hypocrisies. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. The Daily Show was comedy done the hard way, not partisan dunks, but biting caricature and points made through mimicry. To tune in back then was to feel like you were at the back of a 1990s classroom, hanging out with a cool pack of slackers dressed ironically in suits to mock the teacher. So what happened? Jon Stewart, like so many entertainers of his day, was driven around the bend by the Bush administration. The show had always tilted left, but as the 2000s wore on, it became less about mocking the news than shouting at it. Stewart's solo segments were expanded. He became obsessed with Fox News, whose clips he aired often out of context. A brain-dead studio audience cackled anything he said. Democrats hailed the show as brilliant. In reality, it had grown predictable and stale. I'll chime in here. Except for the hilarious part. Yeah. You know, there's something to be said for predictable. Predictable's nice. Like, you hear me talk about David Letterman, come out, two jokes, talk to Paul Schaefer, sit at the desk, do a bit, have a guest. It's predictable. You listen to this show, most episodes, but not today, some late night jokes. Then I do the big news. As the show gets longer, I start to drift a little, talk about my friend Glenn. I try to get you to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. You know, and then at the end, I do a little wacky story. There's a format. It's predictable. It's comfortable. There's nothing wrong with predictable, Mr. Spectator. For those of us who grew up with it, The Daily Show's deterioration felt like a genuine cultural loss. The issue wasn't that Stewart had become a prominent progressive voice. It was that he'd become a pundit, another voice screaming into the void. I'm sorry, was there like a Daily Show backlash that I completely missed? Did people not love Jon Stewart's Daily Show? Were there people sitting at home going, you know, I used to love The Daily Show and then Jon Stewart ruined it? So no surprise then that Stewart gave way to not just his successor, but to about 4 million of them. Today, his heirs, who mimic both his approach and his politics, are spread across practically every network on TV. Stephen Colbert puts his hands in his pockets and mugs at Donald Trump. John Oliver reads Vox articles off the teleprompter and intersperses them with F-bombs. Sam B. is so edgy as to sometimes even call Republicans racists. Jordan Klepper covers hot-button issues. And while he's never done a segment on mercy killings, his show recently underwent one. Ouch. None of these people are in any sense of the word interesting. Boy, Spectator, jeez. Why take your political opponents seriously when they can be so easily destroyed by a facial expression? Does this person not understand comedy? Let me just totally call time out on this article here. Let me ask you a question. You've heard me, I do digs at, say, Adam Sandler. Do you think I actually walk around all day thinking about Adam Sandler? Of course not. Now, when I go in the studio, do I ramp it up? Do I go in a bit of a character? Sure. The poverty of this act can be seen with the current host of The Daily Show, Trevor Noah. Noah has a rep for being unfunny. No, he does not. I knew about Trevor before anyone even mentioned The Daily Show and Trevor Noah. Trevor is hilarious. Watch his stand-up specials, Mr. Spectator. Noah has a rep for being unfunny, but I've always found him enjoyable enough and more sensitive than Stewart ever was. What he isn't is remotely transgressive. His Daily Show, even more than Stewart's, feels like a kind of Zoom-based woke consultancy with denunciations aimed at the usual right-wing targets. Since COVID, he's even instituted a name change, The Daily Social Distancing Show. Ha ha, writes the columnist. Its logo, the Statue of Liberty wearing a mask. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Mr. Spectator. We sat home for 14 months because somebody mismanaged the pandemic. So if Trevor Noah wants to make fun of that, I'm down with it. Spectator writes, now contrast that with what might be my favorite all-time old Daily Show segment. It was a panel discussion from 2001 over the then-popular stunt show Jackass. The three experts, a pregnant civil libertarian, a media watchdog who sprays beer mace into his own eyes to demonstrate Jackass's sway over him, and a communications professor who won't stop playing a violent clip to demonstrate how violent TV is, played by Nancy Walls, Steve Carell, and Stephen Colbert, respectively, perfectly illustrate the absurdity of this kind of news segment. The bit works because it isn't partisan screamo, because it ridicules something we all recognize by embodying it and making us laugh at it. It would be nice to still have a show like that, one that understands that the medium was the message that held up a mirror to the deeply stupid ways we communicate with each other today, and that's long gone. Even the comedians are pundits now. I'll jump in again. Now, I don't know specifically when that segment is. The article says it's from 2001. I'm going to guess it's from prior to September 11, 2001. Let me catch everybody up on the history of the 21st century. In 2001, President Bush was the president, and nothing was going on. It was very, very quiet. I worked in political talk radio at the time. Coming off the Clinton years, it was like, what are we going to talk about today? Kind of like with Biden now, like, what are we going to make fun of? Then, I don't know if you've heard about this, there was a big terrorist attack on America on September 11, 2001. Then, things kind of changed. It was a big deal. People were rattled. Then we sent some troops in Afghanistan. And that sets off a whole chain of events I don't have time to get into today. Then in 2020, there was a pandemic, and we all sat home for 14 months. So why isn't The Daily Show making fun of Jackass? Because times change, man. The AV Club caught up with Robert Smigel talking about Triumph, the insult comic dog. Smigel said, it's been one of the things that separates Triumph as an insult comedian because he's got so many things to protect him and to protect the person he's insulting. So they all know it's nonsense. He's not real. And there's a whole layer of irony attached to this guy, like a bow tie and a cigar. He's making a kind of a borscht belt shtick that it's fairly unthreatening at this point. And he's almost like a low status court jester who can just get away with saying stuff because he's inherently ridiculous already. So that's enjoyable. Comedians always say their stuff is born out of anger. And I love that. I love being able to do stuff that can have a point, be biting on some level, but that doesn't feel angry and is silly like Marx Brothers kinds of stuff. The AV Club says, and there's something about you wearing this awful dog puppet, too. It's not a great puppet. Smigel. Oh, yeah. The level of puppetry is so groundbreakingly crappy, it's probably disarming to see the cheesy operations at hand. I remember the time I had to ask Jennifer Lopez if I could make fun of her during a commercial break at the VMAs, and I have to think the only reason she said yes is because I look so pathetic, like this guy in his 40s on my knees with a puppet, because I was getting in position, I had to be on my knees and was just like, you know, is it all right if my dog makes a joke? She says something like, it's going to be about my butt, and I'm like, maybe? I mean, it's a dog, and she was like, all right, you're pathetic, how can I say no to you? The AV Club said, what was the weirdest how did I get here moment you've had? Smigel, I'd have to say when Ted Cruz wanted to talk to Triumph, I had no expectation that would happen. I did a piece for Colbert a couple years ago where Beto O'Rourke was running against Cruz, and the piece was meant to run the night before the midterms. I went out there with a crew and some writers, and all I thought I was going to do was cover both campaigns. Cruz and Beto, that would be enough, because there's a lot you can say about Ted Cruz without having to meet the guy. But I'm at this Cruz rally, and he's glad handling everybody afterward on this big stage, and one of the writers pretended that he was Cruz's age. Basically, actually, he's older, but he said, we went to Harvard together. He's just making stuff up, trying to get Ted's attention. Ted Cruz was talking to a million other people on stage, but the writer says, hey, Triumph's here. And Ted Cruz was like suddenly paying attention. Then he saw me and he waved his hand over with his big smirking grin like, this is going to be a battle of wits to remember. He thinks he's very funny and very smart, Harvard educated, and he thought he would represent himself well, and he couldn't resist the opportunity to do that. Here I was, surrounded by all these Ted Cruz supporters who just had nothing but hatred in their eyes. And then there's Ted Cruz. Somehow he threw me a softball that probably got the biggest response either ever got. It was a catharsis in itself in the theater. It was an exchange where Cruz thought he had checkmated me because he said, just remember, it was the Democrats who had you neutered. And everyone around him chuckled heartily. He is literally giggling like a schoolgirl because he made a funny. But thankfully, it was kind of a softball. I was like, yes, I support spaying and neutering just like Trump did to you. He literally went, doe, just like Homer Simpson. I'll tell you about another one really quick. It was a couple of years earlier. We're in New Hampshire. We're doing this ridiculous piece about Chris Christie. I decided to cover Iowa and New Hampshire because I thought it would be fascinating because you have such access to candidates because they're going to coffee shops and diners. They're so accessible, so I thought it would be an amazing experience to get up close to people. We did this ridiculous thing. We were pretending that Chris Christie was going to a diner, and we were warning them of all these things they had to do. I brought these two guys, and as Triumph was like, hi, I'm Governor Christie's advisor. We're here to scout the place before the governor comes in. It was like, all right, you're going to need to put the padlock on this cake display. The governor's liable to put his fist through the glass. When you serve the governor, use an open palm. Otherwise, he's liable to bite your hand off. It was just ridiculous. Anyway, we do this whole thing. We don't have an ending. So we're sitting in the back room of the diner thinking about ideas. And the manager walks in and says, Chris Christie's here. It was called the Airport Diner in New Hampshire in Manchester, and it turned out, because there was a huge snowstorm, he had to go back to Jersey for a photo op like he was handling the crisis. So we get our gear and start shooting, and we saw him walking out of the bathroom with his jacket off. He's just got Humpty Dumpty high water of the pants all the way up to his belly button, and I decided, I've got to do this as a reporter. So we go into the bathroom like I was covering a hurricane or something like a reporter. It's my responsibility to determine what happened in there. It's so childish. Then it turned out someone else was in there. So I interviewed him like he was a hurricane survivor who had to save his family. Then we walk out of the bathroom and we see that Chris Christie's at a booth now drinking a milkshake. So we had Triumph just pass by nonchalantly saying, "Everything's good here. Nobody's fat." And that was the ending. It was amazing. Craziest thing that ever happened was doing an entire piece on Chris Christie, and then Chris Christie shows up with all the places he could have been. That's your comedy news for today. You can follow this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.